beautiful, sun-soaked vineyards nestled amongst breathtaking rolling hills as a gentle breeze comes off the surrounding sea. Iconic imagery of French wine country. But this is not France. We are in Kuban, Russia, on the Black Sea, where recently they've gotten serious about making some world-class wines. Let's learn more. Interesting to note, this area actually has a history of winemaking. That helps to create the conditions for the wine industry to thrive here. Abrao Dursault is one of Russia's most famous sparkling wines. Its creation dates back to the 19th century. George, this is absolutely beautiful. Thanks for bringing us out here. There are many places in the world that have hills and are close to the sea. What makes this place, Abrao Dursault, stand out as like the place?
Look, when I see this place, the first time I understood that there was something special in Abrao Dursault. Actually, now that I know a little bit other places from Russia, here we have a combination of as you said, the landscape, the proximity of a water, lake, or Black Sea. Krasnodar region is a region which can be very cold in winter and very dry and hot in summer. We have the influence of the sea, which here brings us mild winter. And I would say as well, after, during the ripening time, some fresher temperature on the night than we can have in some other places. So it brings some micro condition, microclimate condition, very special.
What about that harsh sun? We know that climate change is affecting the taste of wine. Scientists have been saying that it really is affecting how wines are evolving. Does that mean that the sparkling wines that we are tasting now are not even close to what we had, let's say, 100 years ago?
Locally, I have no idea how was it 100 years ago. I suspect that in the 100 last years, there were many other parameters which have helped to change the type of wine rather than just temperature. You know, the type of how the vines were cultivated, how the wines were either made in the winery has nothing to do comparing to what we do today and what we did in the past. Mm-hmm. Even if 100 years ago started, the very first step of Abrao Dursault was close to what was made in Champagne at this time. The people who started to plant some vines here, I don't know what was their feeling, but I think it was a great idea to put vines here.
Mm-hmm. Well, as beautiful as it is out here, part of making wine, that the sparkling wine, you have to go down to where the bottles are and in the cellars. Shall we go take a look?
Fine. All right. Let's do it.
So this is fascinating to me to be down here. Can you tell me a little bit about how this wine is actually made? I mean, what is the process like? Where do the bubbles come from? Are they natural?
Yes, it's part of the mystery of sparkling wine. Here we are in a place where the wine are already sparkling in the bottle. And actually, one of the secret of a good sparkling wine when it's middle classic is the second fermentation, which happened in this bottle and which is closed with caps. So it makes that the bubbles remain inside, and it's thanks to some yeasts that we add in the wine with some sugar to create this second alcoholic fermentation, what we call a prise de mousse in French, but it's understandable in English as well. And the last point is to wait certain time to get this fermentation, and as well to wait some months, if not some years, to have this interaction between the wine and the yeast, what people call autolysis, to have this bonification, which will give to the wine the final taste of fine bubbles, good aroma, nice bouquet, and behavior in mouth, which will be creamy and very delicate.
Mm-hmm. What about turning the bottles? I know that's important for the process. What is that all about?
Ah, okay. You mean
each day they have to be handled?
When they are not on holiday. No, it's what we call the remuage. Because in the bottles you have some yeasts, and if we would take a bottle, we'd see that it's cloudy inside, and the sparkling wine has to be clear. So there is a step where we can bring all the yeast to one point, and it's this reeling process. Mm-hmm. We do it by turning, by inclinating. It can be two times a day, can be sometimes every 3 hours, depending if it's made by hand or if it's made mechanically. Mm-hmm. But it's something which takes, in total, minimum 2-3 days, and sometimes can be as well two weeks or 2-3 weeks. But it's to prepare the disgorging.
What about the age of wine, in terms of what's the oldest bottle of wine that you have here at the facility?
To be honest, Abrao, we have some old bottles, but we are not such focused to make collections. We rather are interested in, let's say, normal timing. 5 years for a cuvée Imperial Rosé is already a nice time. I would not say that the best wine are the oldest. Mm-hmm. For me, a very good wine can be young, and I even prefer a young wine very good than an old wine very good.
Mm-hmm. Well, shall we go see more of the winery?
Up to you. Let's go. Right.
Okay, so what determines the value of a wine? What makes a wine expensive versus a cheap wine?
So there are many factors. Some people consider as well that the person, the guy who is, or the girl who is making the wine is important, like a little bit the chef, the cuisine, for example. I think this is not critical, it's not a pressure point. For me, it's much more the history of a brand. For example, Abrao d'Urso, it's 160 years. So it's not to say that the wine is a cheap wine. It has a value because it has stand such a long time.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have to ask, you're French, you started your career in France, you've come here to Russia to make wine. What made you stay here for so long?
I met the right people at the right place with a very interesting project. The quality level are, I would say, higher than they were before, but we are progressing, and this dynamic is for me very interesting and positive. That's why I said, what you do here, you will not be able to do it somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So I stayed.
All right. Fascinating conversation. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Sean.
This is Chateau de Talun, where their philosophy is to bring a little bit of France right here onto Russian soil, with a little bit of Russian soul as well. Let's check it out. I know that when you first started, you waited 15 years until these vines were more mature before you started making wine. Why is that? What does the age of the vine have to do with the quality of the wine?
As the grape vines age, the wine they produce gets better. This is because older vines have longer roots, reaching deeper into the soil. Plus, they are more resistant to weather fluctuations, making them much better at surviving droughts and a lack of precipitation, which often happens in the summer and before harvest. Once the roots are deep enough, that usually takes about 12 years for a vine growing in one place, the grapes they yield and the resulting wine are of a much higher quality.
So I've read that you do everything you can to prevent the mechanical damage to the grapes. What does that mean exactly? Do you do everything by hand, hand pick, hand sort?
Most of the work we do in the vineyard is by hand. Every year, we focus on each individual vine at least 4 to 5 times. Basically, every season, as we start on our manual tasks, the first thing we do is the pruning, which is meant to adjust the expected yield of the vines. This is done to every single grapevine. Sometime after that, we do what's called shoot thinning. This is another way to regulate yield. to keep the vines balanced and make sure the grapes ripen as evenly as possible. Once we see the grape clusters forming, this is the fruit set phase. We look at each vine separately and decide whether we should do green harvesting. This means removing some of the grapes in order to help the whole cluster ripen more evenly. The harvesting itself is also done by hand. We pick the grapes and put them in special boxes so that they can be brought to the processing facility in perfect condition, free of mechanical damage and unspoiled.
So, for me, consistency for a business is important, so that you have the same tradition, the same quality of wines each year. But there's so many things that go into the making of wine. The weather can change, the harvest can be bad. How do you get that consistency year after year?
What's important and essential is the style of the wine. We have an oenologist, a winemaking professional, who customizes the wine. To creating a distinct style, he defines a final product that goes to the consumer. In the winemaking process, starting all the way back from our work in the vineyards, our goal is to identify the best conditions. What you said is absolutely true. We are in the agricultural business, so we can't have good weather on demand. But nevertheless, we try to cultivate our grapevines, source and grade them, work with the vine itself, and overall make sure that the high quality of our wine is maintained year after year. Of course, that doesn't change the fact that there are great years for wine, and then there are years where all we can do is maintain high quality.
What about these barrels? What are they made of? What happens to the juice inside them? Why are they so important to the winemaking process?
These come to play in the final stages of wine production. Not all wine goes into barrels, only the best does. We age our wine for about 2 years. This is done in order to add complexity and depth. Also, we have over 10 different barrel types. Each grape variety is vinified and aged separately. After that, we make blends based on which barrel produced the best result or how well it adds to the balanced assemblage.
Now, when we came in, we heard music playing. And I understand that you play classical music to your wines. What does that do to the process? Is that just a gimmick, or does it actually help the wine mature or get a better taste?
We believe that at the core of our lives is balance and harmony. Classical music helps us maintain an inner sense of balance and harmony, and we believe that wine can sense that as well.
Mm-hmm. Which music does the wine like the best?
We've tried out different things so far, but we're still exploring. We use pieces by Russian composers such as Tchaikovsky, Glinka, and Mussorgsky.
Now, I know that a lot of people say, do you know your wines? In your opinion, what does it mean to understand a wine? I mean, how do you get to that process?
This is a very difficult question, and I haven't really been able to find an answer. Sometimes I feel like we really understand wine, which sets us off in a more inspired frame of mind. Sometimes it feels like wine is setting a new task for us, a problem to solve in order to improve our work, to adjust something, to better understand the people who choose our wine.
Some of the newest wineries here are getting a modern twist, and their impressive architectural designs catch the eye. The Skalisti Bereg Gravitational Winery certainly deserves the extra attention. So, this place looks fabulous, but not just the looks. You specialize in gravitational winery. Quite simply, what is that?
Our winery is built in three levels. You can see it over there. On the top, the grapes are processed. Then one level down is wine fermentation and storage, and the lowest level is for wine barreling. That way, the product, first grapes, then wine, moves along the production process from one level to another using only gravity. This helps eliminate any unnecessary stress on the grapes and later, the wine, which is good for the quality. And we can adjust the process flow the way we need.
Now, I know many wines have laboratories, but yours is impressive. We were in there. It's quite clean and pristine. Why does a winery need a laboratory?
A laboratory helps us measure certain parameters of the grapes, the juice, and the wine to make the right decisions at the right time. Occasionally, the lab takes samples to monitor the storage and aging of our wine so that the wine stays healthy and within the desired parameters. Our final product, that is, bottled wine, is sampled and tested in the laboratory. It has the latest equipment that allows us to conduct enhanced tests on about 70 samples simultaneously.
Hmm. Now, kind of an interesting question, I guess. It's a beautiful day, it's a hot day, but climate change, I've heard, is changing the percentage of alcohol in the actual wines. Why, how, and is that a problem for you?
Now, despite the fact that the climate helps increase the percentage of alcohol in wines, the trend is actually the opposite. People want wines with less alcohol. Nobody wants high-alcohol wines, although alcohol plays an important role in shaping the organoleptic qualities. But experienced winemakers know how to handle this process. We work with grape vines to slow down the accumulation of sugars in grapes. Here we harvest our grapes not when they reach a certain sugar content level, but when they are technically ripe.
Now, you're located next to the Utrecht Nature Reserve, which means you have this modern technological facility and nature right next to each other. Is it possible to strike a balance in winemaking and nature and technology?
Of course. Moreover, we live in tandem. Nature and everything that surrounds us is part of us. Even our cellar, where the wine ages in barrels, is a recess cut out in rock, which allows us to keep the desired ambient temperature without using any electricity. And the gravitational method that we use allows us to avoid the use of electric pumps, saving energy and allowing the product to flow naturally, moved by gravity.
Okay, Kirill, it is said here that making wine is an art. If this is the case, who is the most important artist?
I believe, and the entire team here believes, that the main artist is this place, the nature, the terroir of this region. It's responsible for the quality of the wine we get here. It includes factors like soil and climate, and the grapevines we planted more than 10 years ago. All these things help create our wine. They provide the basis for quality winemaking here. And we are merely the medium for transforming all the input data we get into the final product, a glass of wine.
When you pour a glass of wine, we have these beautiful glasses right here. What do you look for? Do you look for the color? Do you look for the opacity, the clarity? What are you looking for in a good glass of wine?
All the organoleptic properties of wine are important. Any wine tasting starts with the assessment of color, then flavor, then taste. There are wine lovers, experts, and sommeliers who lay more focus on the taste, making little of the wine's color or flavor. But in any case, all these three components are important, and they should offset one another, providing a balance. You can't have one prevailing over the other two.
So we've all heard, let's let the wine breathe a little bit. Why does a wine need to breathe? Is it alive? I mean, what's the story here?
When we talk about breathing, we mean access to oxygen. Wine needs oxygen just like humans. If we block access to oxygen during the wine aging process in the bottle, its development will stall. That's why small doses of oxygen are needed, especially for the wine aging in oak barrels. Small amounts of oxygen get into the wine through wood's pores. And once the wine is bottled, oxygen enters through the cork, allowing the wine to grow and gain complexity and richness. When you open a bottle of aged wine, you let it breathe for some time too. Aeration helps the wine open up, bringing out its texture and aroma, revealing the complexity of its bouquet.
So we've all heard about the aromas of wines. Each wine has its own specific smell with different notes. Some could be leathery, some could be fruity, some could be chocolatey, buttery, even weird things like cat pee, petrol. Where do these come from? Is this just our imagination, or is there something really to this?
That depends on the soil and grape variety. Grapes are very complex berries. They contain a number of chemical elements and mineral substances, which later on lend various flavors and hints to the wine. It's the grape skins, by the way, not the flesh, that contain most of the coloring agents and flavor compounds. Fermentation and aging, on the lees or in an oak barrel, help transform these flavors. And you can smell and taste them in your glass of wine. And let's not forget that wine tasting is a very individual experience. People's perceptions of wine, flavor, and taste can be different. In fact, when two people smell the same wine, their sensory associations may be very different.
Well, cheers to that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A number of new family-run and boutique wineries are springing up across the region. One of them is the Sinetch Winery. It pays special attention to preserving the tastes the local soil gifts the wine with. Let's find out more with its founders.
Now, Nikita, this is the perfect setting for a conversation about wine. Now, you could be considered a garage winery. Who is a garagiste, and what exactly do you do here?
Well, the term garage wine is from France, where it referred to a model of winemaking without advanced tools or technologies. In this model, the focus is above all on the quality of the grapes. Our top task is grow top quality grapes to produce small quantities of our signature wines. So garage, in this case, simply refers to the small size of the business.
Mm-hmm. Now, it seems to me that a smaller business like yours would have a little bit more room to experiment with what you do. Is that true? And what kind of experiments have you done here?
That's true. We like to experiment. We like to work on our wines a little longer. For example, when we make white wine, after the grapes are pressed, the juice has to settle. Sediment has to form at the bottom, leaving clear juice on the top. The juice is then ready to work with, but we like to shake it all up and let it settle again, because it makes the juice richer in taste. It gives it more flavor. That's one example. Another experimental wine is this one right here. It could be called an overdone rosé or underdone red. It's a glue-glue wine. Glue-glue is a thirst-quenching sound like glug-glug that you make when drinking something delicious and refreshing. Its alcohol content is low. There isn't a lot of glue-glue wine produced in Russia as yet, so it's one of our signature wines too. So it's true that we have some room for experiment, and we like to work on each of our wines with special care, adding tweaks to the production technology.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've heard that here you have a philosophy to try and limit human interference with the grapes and in the process. What does that mean, and how do you do that?
The key idea is to pay special attention to the grapes. We pick the harvesting time with great care, because it defines the style of the wine a lot. That's our philosophy, that a winemaker can observe and make timely, balanced decisions. Also, we usually don't mix different grapes, which means we can showcase all the grapes we work with at their best. If something were to go wrong, we'd always be able to mix and make a coupage. There's this joke among winemakers that if you make a mistake, make a coupage. But it's just a joke, of course.
Final question, I guess, is, the setting is beautiful. It seems fun. Does this job bring you joy? And if so, how so?
Of course, it brings me a lot of joy. It's more than a job, it's a lifestyle. We do a lot of work here. It's a lot of farm work, but it always gives me joy, no matter how hard the work is. And the best part is the result.
Farhad, this is absolutely stunning. You put a lot of emphasis on terroir, or otherwise a sense of place. But it's not just about the soil. What exactly is terroir?
Over 50 million years ago, there was an ocean where we're walking right now, the Tethys Ocean. After it disappeared, the magmatic rocks formed limestone-based soil. This type of soil is right under our feet. This limestone is from that era, 50 to 60 million years ago. This lime-rich soil is very good for the vine. Also, there are significant drops in temperature at night. We're under direct sunlight right now, and without the wind, it would be very hot. But at nighttime, we have to wrap up, because the temperature drops to 8 to 9 degrees, maybe even lower. The difference in temperature during the day and at night provides provides wine with the right level of acidity and minerality. Aromatic precursors are maintained, so we get light, fragrant wines from here.
One thing I've noticed is that a lot of wineries are proud of their traditions. That's a big part of the feeling of the business. But you're a new company, a new business. Do you have any traditions that you already have started?
We're a small winery, but we already have an established tradition of making a light wine for ourselves from the first grapes. When we work all day and get very tired, we drink one or two glasses of this light wine to get some of our energy back. In Russian, we call this wine Shimurdiachok. There is no exact English translation, but that is our tradition, to open each season with this wine.
Perfect. Now, I know that this is harvest time. What is so important about this time? What happens if you get it wrong, if you harvest too early or too late? How important is that for you?
We monitor different sections of the vineyard every day. This morning, we got samples from different parts, testing sugar, acidity, pH, and other parameters we need to know to make sure we set the right date for harvesting each kind of grapes. That is the key decision for every winemaker. The wine's characteristics will depend on it.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are many different varieties that are famous, Merlot, Cabernet, Sauvignon, all different types of grapes, but you deal with some that are not quite, I would say, ordinary. What do you work with here?
Having my science background, I think that you need to grow local grape varieties here. We get really good wine from them, and it's special. We all know Cabernet from Bordeaux. Who needs Cabernet from Anapa? Let's make great wine from local grapes. That's the right thing to do.
So, you're not necessarily a chateau, but how do you distinguish yourself specifically?
As you can see, there are two small oak trees behind us. When we planted the vineyard, I told the guys to leave them as our landmark. We also have two wonderful pets, our corgis, who entertain our guests. So you can get a mood boost through this fun energy as well as a glass of wine. The two wonderful corgis are very loving, and they enjoy meeting new people at the vineyard.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sean.
And just a special message from my friends Alexa and Karitsa. If you do choose to drink, follow your local laws and drink responsibly.